It used to be that people took care of their own. It was a matter of pride. Except in rare and extreme cases, the indigent brother, the aged aunt, the orphan niece, the widowed sister, the retarded, the crippled, the blind, and the sick were absorbed by the family. From the cradle to the grave, most were helped at home. It was not only a matter of family pride, but a social expectation, typical of agricultural society. There were some, of course, who had no family. Some few had to turn to the town because they had no kith or kin, or those who had were too poor to help even their own. That was a rare and embarrassing thing to have to admit to a home-centered society that you had no adequate family. For them, there were a few public institutions, grim, minimal refuges of last resort. There was the public asylum, the pest house, the poorhouse, and the potter's field. For those who needed temporary public assistance, the town authorities authorized its poor master to dole out help to the poor, unfortunate enough to have a family incapable of saving them such shame. We've come a long way since the days of the poor master, that single arbitrary dispenser of dole, who, like as not, knew each supplicant's situation to a humiliating degree. It must have been painful to be forced by circumstances to come face to face with him, spread out your needs, and stand with your pride in your hands while he, like some lord of the manor, decided whether or not to bestow the town's largesse upon you. Thank heavens we have made social services less embarrassing. Now that government has replaced the family as the friend in need, it's less personally shameful to ask for help. For one thing, we expect more from the public sector because we've paid for it with taxes and pensions and Social Security. Also, the individual scrutiny of the poor master has been replaced with dozens of bureaucrats who can grind out assistance without touching us personally. We've come a long way since the poor master, the pest house, and the county home. We may not have filial piety to hold us from the cradle to the grave, but we have institutionalized humanitarianism from prenatal care to burial benefits, if we need it, and qualify. Apparently, Mary did. Mary had no family left when her husband died. They'd had no children, only a nephew somewhere who was her only surviving relative. Like a good many older widows, Mary stayed on in her home, surrounded by things that had grown heavy with memories, and that, in Mary's case, also grew heavy with dust. She'd never been much of a housekeeper. She loved talking with people. In a voice so loud and a laugh so raucous, it could be embarrassing at times. Mary was a character. She loved hockey games and hardly missed one as long as she was able to go or as long as somebody took her. I'd see her tucked into her customary corner in the arena, enthusiastically waving to friends and waiting for the game to begin. Her knit cap bobbled incessantly as she gave voice to her opinions every hockey night in Appleton Arena. At home, she tended her birds. She used to have a lot of birds, a parrot, a pair of robins, various canaries, and several parakeets, and they all flew free, perching everywhere in her house. They gave the place the air of a second-rate zoo. By 1970, Mary was 85 and even less inclined to the house beautiful than before. In fact, she was not even inclined to the house hygienic. The birds had gone, but the dust grew thicker, the clutter more cluttered. And in the fetid midst of it all, Mary got older and more lame. But her voice stayed strong, and she managed to get around with a walker. A few devoted friends still came to see her, despite the odors, the roaches, and the fruit flies that Mary's leftovers spawned or attracted. One of the neighbors sent in food, as did the Office of the Aging. And when she fell one winter, a public ambulance took her to the hospital, where Medicaid helped. A doctor suggested a nursing home, but Mary would have none of it. They grew fearful that she would set herself on fire with the gas stove, and so they turned off the gas overnight and on again later in the day. Mary didn't care. She drank a bottle of beer for breakfast instead of a cup of coffee and nibbled at the cold, unrefrigerated leftovers the public services had brought in. Younger neighbors thought all this was no way to live. It was foul and unsafe. So they called in more public officials, the public health doctor, the director of geriatric services, and a public psychiatrist. They were all properly horrified. There was Mary, loud and defiant amidst the fruit flies, the clutter, the roaches, and the dust. She was 90 years old and somewhat incontinent. So, despite her protests, they took her to the state hospital, where she was to be until they could find a place in a nursing home. I asked a neighbor if Mary liked it there, and she said, "Well, she's clean." We've come a long way since the poor master, the poorhouse, and the public asylum. You don't have to go hat in hand and bow and scrape and feel ashamed anymore. In fact, like Mary, if you violate enough of the sensitivities of others, you don't have to go to anyone for help. They'll come and get you, whether you like it or not. Don't misunderstand me. I guess people shouldn't live like that. But isn't that when there are others in the home, especially children? Mary lived alone. She wanted to live alone, with fruit flies and roaches and dust and memories. Can't you do that when you get to be 70 or 90? Age, doesn't that earn you the right? Absolutely not. I don't question for a moment the value of good nutrition, personal hygiene, or public health. But I don't think that Mary was jeopardizing the health of others. She was just assaulting their eyes and noses, which I am inclined to think they should have kept out of her business, except to help her be who she chose to be. But you see, we have developed certain attitudes toward people in need. First, we have decided that it's right for us to define the need, which is certainly right in the case where another's chosen way of life poses a real and present threat to our welfare. But what real threat did Mary pose, except to herself? We also believe that we can intimidate elderly people. We assume that they are incompetent by virtue of age, even though only 5% of the aged are actually senile. But in a youth-worshipping society, it's easy to intimidate the aged because both we and they devalue them. Instead of standing up proud and defiant, even if that stand has to be with pain, a cane, or a walker, they allow their middle-aged offspring or some middle-aged doctor or lawyer or social worker to push them into what is good rather than what is best for them. Middle-aged people who are both the children of the aged and the people of power in a society mean well, but their good intentions take on an authoritarian bearing. There is a tendency in any social service system to assume that they don't really know what's good for them, that they need to be protected from themselves, that they are all incompetent. So what does a beneficent society do? It takes care of them. It's a little like house cleaning. You pick up whatever is out of place and put it away. Once you get in the house beautiful habit, you can even do that with people. Put them away. I object. I'm a reactionary of sorts. I want to go back to the way it was. No, I don't want to go back to the poor master, the poor house, or the absence of modern social services. I like institutionalized humanitarianism, but I would like it with a human touch. A touch that realizes that people in need have names and personalities and preferences and oddities, that if they don't truly harm others could be left alone, even if they do clutter up the social landscape and do keep the community from looking like the house beautiful. So I want to go back. Not to the worst of the way it was, but to a society that could tolerate its old, its halt, its blind, its harmless, feeble-minded, its slow and its lame, and give them what peace is possible. I want to go back. Or better, I want to go ahead to a system of social services that, along with all the good it does, recognizes that everyone is a someone behind the social need and beneath the personal problem.